So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Cheryl Johnson, who is Head of HR for Echo Global Logistics. Hi, Cheryl. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you so much.
You're great. So, Cheryl, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about the work that you do?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, I'm Head of HR for Echo Global Logistics. My background actually was primarily in retail. So I've worked in the retail sector for almost 15 years and got introduced to Echo, which is not retail. And the reason I got introduced to Echo is because of the work the CEO wanted to do with culture and employee experience, which is where a lot of my background came from, working for companies that had really well-known cultures and corporate environments, and also being high growth. So Echo is a company that has experienced massive growth over our 11-year history, and the experience I've had from other companies was also high growth. And that's how I got connected to Echo. I'm responsible for what I would say is the culture and the employee experience, and being the architect of it through, you know, really helping to implement the vision that the CEO has.
Excellent. Now, the reason why we got connected is that somebody was telling me about that you're doing something really interesting with performance management and real-time sort of feedback. So that just gets me interested because it's like, oh, that's interesting, because a lot of people just do it on a quarterly basis or an annual basis or both, or but then you guys are starting to do something in real time. So can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing, why you're doing it, and why, you know, so what's the benefit of it, or what the benefits you're seeing of it?
Yeah. So I think there's a big fad out there right now. Not I think, I know, because it's on every single magazine you see, every single article that HR people or business people might be reading, and it's the death of the performance review.
Right.
And I am not one of those HR people that actually agrees that the performance review should be killed.
Okay.
I actually think that the performance review is a good idea, poorly executed and very outdated in how it's being approached. And you know, our culture, we have 70% of our population are millennials.
Okay.
And so how they engage in an environment is very different, and what they expect is different. The other thing that's interesting about our culture is at least 60% of our workforce, and maybe it's a little bit more, are in roles that are commission-based.
Right.
So the way you measure performance is very different. You know, if they're selling and they're making money, that's what they care about. So talking to them about performance is an interesting thing. So how do you actually make them care about a performance conversation when what they do from a day-to-day perspective shows up in whether or not they're making money?
Okay.
And so we've really taken the approach of definitely the ongoing communication and conversation about performance, but it has to be directly connected to something that they care about. Sometimes a commission rep doesn't actually care about, you know, if my performance meets expectation or that, because they're not getting merit increases, they're not getting bonuses. Mm-hmm. So what do they care about? Well, what they care about is being the best in their field.
Right.
So we have monthly conversations with them. We use a social platform to conduct those monthly conversations. And they're all around the behaviors that if you demonstrate these behaviors, we figured out what they were. We said, hey, these are the behaviors of the people who make serious money on a commission position.
And
that, so if
and
you want to be one of those people.
And that's
go ahead.
That's aligned to your culture and things and employee experience that you talked about earlier. Would that be right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, our employee experience, we want everybody here to be successful.
Right.
Like, we genuinely are pushing our workforce that this is not about managing a process. This is about helping you be successful. Because if you're successful, you're happy, you're engaged, you're taking care of our customers are going to come back to us, and we're going to keep growing as a company. So everything we do, every step we take, every action we take is about helping people realize what they have to do to be successful. And if they can't be successful here, we work really hard to act quickly on that and be transparent and let people know that this is probably not an environment where they're going to be happy and successful, so they can go somewhere else and be happy and successful.
Okay. And so the thing you would you say you do it on a monthly basis, and it's modeled on the behavior of the best performers in their field. So are those behaviors, do you monitor those behaviors over time, and do they kind of change over time, and therefore the feedback possibly changes over time?
You know, it's possible. So recently we've done a study on who are the most successful sales reps and who are the least successful. And by successful, it's a combination of people who actually, what I would call, thrive in the position. So they stay here for a certain period of time and they're producing, you know, above average results. So we kind of studied that group of people. And then we studied the people who stay, but I wouldn't call them thriving. You know, they're here, they're probably making a decent living, but they're not really excelling. And then we studied the people who, you know, kind of fizzled out pretty quickly.
Okay.
And we've been studying this over time because it will change. Our business changes. We give people more resources. We become a better brand. Sometimes it makes your job easier. Sometimes it makes it harder. So the nature of the market could change the success factors that it would take for someone to be really good at their job.
Mm-hmm.
And so we study that pretty much on an ongoing basis. And we recently just tweaked the what I would call is the successful, you know, persona. We call it a persona, and have a better sense of who those people are. So one, we are doing a better job of selecting people into those positions. And then two, we're teaching the managers on it's kind of, when do you know how you can coach this person so that you can help them be successful? And when do we realize we might have someone who doesn't have the right persona? And is there another position in the company that they'd find success faster if they were in a different role?
And I guess my question would be, is that there's always the it's always interesting when you kind of adopt a new system, particularly when it's around, you know, not front facing. So it's almost so no disrespect, but no disrespect meant at all. But when we add another sort of system which isn't necessarily, particularly if you're in a sales role and it's not linked to sales, some people might see it as being, I feel like, admin related, and therefore managing the change can be really hard. So I'd be really interested to see how you got people on board, and particularly if they have to put, if there's a data requirement input that they have to take on, how does that all work?
Okay, so that's an awesome question, because every system. So I mentioned our population is millennial, so.
Yeah.
I believe you have to use technology to engage this workforce.
Yeah.
And so I'm pushing, from an HR perspective, I'm pushing technology in ways that the organization's never seen, and not a ton of people are necessarily using it that way, but I do believe it's how you engage this group. So I'm constantly having to sell, why should we be investing in an HR technology when if we did this, our sales reps would be more productive? And I have to be able to convince the organization that these are the things that actually will drive engagement, and if you drive engagement, it will drive business results. And I have to stand on that many, 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 many times. That's soapbox, which I do.
Okay.
And the way that we were able to get the buy-in across the organization on the performance is I actually started before performance. So performance was my second introduction.
Right.
I needed to get the organization to see that just a general culture and engagement level can actually shift business results. And so I actually started, and it's the same platform, so the same platform where you would do the performance, I started with recognition. And the reason I started with recognition is because we had just rolled out values. And I needed to show, you know, I kind of tell people, like, the idea of using values to drive your culture is not revolutionary, it's not new, but I think the way that we implemented them and rolled them into the organization, I think that way is a bit revolutionary.
And
so we used the social piece to really ingrain the behaviors that we wanted to see people in. And we launched this social recognition, which, by the way, there's leaders who look at this and say, I don't understand. I don't even use Facebook. What, you know, why are people going to go on and like someone's comment? And why do they want to give each other social recognition? Like, can't I just go give them a pat on the back or send them an email? And I was like, yeah, if you're not a millennial, that makes sense. But as a millennial, everything they do is public. Everything they do is social. So this is how they operate. So we rolled out the social platform, and we had recognition badges in there. And the badges were designed to reinforce the behaviors we thought were successful and necessary to drive the culture and to drive business results.
Okay.
And they're also clever. So, you know, we had, one in there was the honey badger. So if you ever watched that the Honey Badger YouTube, young culture. So we have a Honey Badger badge where it's just someone who's not going to let anything get in their way and they're going to get the results they need.
Okay.
So kind of fun badges like that. And so what you would see is you started to see employees from the bottom up recognizing their colleagues and recognizing each other for doing the things that we want people to do more of.
Yeah.
And then I had to push the rest of the leadership team that, you know, they really care if people see it. That's the whole reason they put it out there. So that means we need to go into the system as leaders of the organization and we need to show them that we see it. We need to comment. We need to like.
Yeah.
We need to give badges. I know it feels foreign, but, you know, I would go over to one of the leaders and I was like, hey, there are three badges I want you to go like. Just let me help you. I'll show you how to like it. All you have to do is like it. And they're going to be like, oh, my gosh, the president liked my badge. And they do. They really kind of freak out when they see that happen. So that's how I started it. And when you started to see the authenticity of the comments that people were putting in there,
yeah,
and generally recognizing, like, you helped me out in a pinch. You helped me this weekend recover a load that had we not, we could have lost a client.
Yeah.
Like, that's real. And that's real stuff that we want to drive more of. So I got the buy-in with that.
Okay.
And you started to see, like, wow, that really does drive performance, behaviors, and culture. Mm-hmm. So I earned the trust that, all right, I don't know if I always buy into this, like, soft HR stuff, but that seemed to work. So then the next introduction was like, okay, now let's take it one level up and actually start talking to them about their performance.
Okay.
And I think because I had the positive momentum with the social piece or the social recognition piece, it was much easier to get them to buy into that.
So that's fantastic. So you've just got to create momentum, right? You've got to almost create the right to do more. And not just tell people what to do, but, you know, to start off kind of like slowly and then kind of build from there. It's just all about building trust, I guess. But I guess my question, you go back to a figure that you sort of shared earlier. You talked about 70% of your workforce are millennials. Then that just makes me think, what about the 30%? I mean, that are left, that are not in that age group, that might not necessarily be as... have the same sort of behavior sort of traits as the millennials, might not be so digitally savvy or so social or whatever it might be, or digitally social. How do you get them involved in that platform? Or do you have a parallel sort of offline equivalent, or do you give them a choice?
No. So it's what's interesting. I don't know about you, but I'm on Facebook shamelessly.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that I see so many more non-millennials on Facebook.
Sure.
That are, they may not be on Twitter and Instagram, that might be beyond their tech, but Facebook, you know, they're used to social.
Uh-huh.
So, and a lot of people who aren't millennials also may have kids or other family members who are millennials, so they're used to it.
Yeah.
And they understand it. They just don't need it. And that's the difference. Millennials need it. Like, if you don't have it, that you can't even connect with them. The other generations use it, they just don't necessarily need it.
Okay.
But what I'm finding, we don't have this issue at all where the different generations are not engaging with the system, is they like it. They benefit from the fact that millennials demand this kind of interaction. And the Gen X's and the baby boomers are like, well, I like being appreciated too, I just don't demand it.
Right.
So it does create this. We don't have any problems with the different generations. The other thing that we communicate and educate to our workforce a lot is that just because our workforce is predominantly millennial, when you think about who you have to interact with, your clients,
mm-hmm.
your partners, who you're serving, it's every generation. So we all have to have an appreciation and an awareness on how we interact with all the different generations so you can be more effective with your customer base.
Okay, perfect. And so... you've been doing this, you're in your second stage now. You started with the recognition and now you're into performance and things. So what's been the impact on, you know, business results, or let's start with kind of employee metrics like, you know, turnover, satisfaction, engagement, that sort of stuff. And then let's, you know, tell me about that. And then tell me about some of the business results you've seen as a result of these initiatives.
Sure. So I'll start with the employee metrics. So
yeah.
We did an engagement survey in 2014,
yeah.
And then we did another one in 2015, and we're about to approach our 2016, and we do it at the same time every year. We only do it as a baseline. You know, because we're asking feedback all year long. We do surveys and focus groups all year long, but we need to track a baseline. In 2015, we saw an improvement in every single engagement question we asked, every single one. So there was not one that stayed static or went backwards. So that to me is working. Overall, our turnover numbers are going down as an organization. We have areas that have spiked in 2015. It's really in our sales area, and I attribute that, and this is going to get you to the business result that's interesting, is 2014. So we're a third-party logistics company, so we deal in transportation. So 2014 for third-party logistics company was an amazing freight year, is what we call it. It was a great freight year. Capacity was tight, so people were making a lot of money in the brokerage. In 2015, the freight year, not so good. Fuel prices went down. That has an effect on everybody. So 2015 was a really tough market. So that means if you're a sales rep, it's harder to make money in 2015 than 14. Okay. So we did see some of our numbers go up higher in 2015 than 14, but still better than 2013 turnover numbers. So the improvement is matching what we'd expect. From a business perspective, last year we saw a net revenue growth rate of 39%. So in a tough, tough freight market, we still saw very, very good growth. And we've had 8 straight quarters of greater than 20% organic truckload volume growth, which is also amazing number. So when you look at that, it's like, okay, and this is, of course, being an HR person, and I know when I'm talking to my finance and numbers colleagues that I got to bring the stats, I like to tell them that it's because of the engagement. Had we not had the engagement levels we had, what could have our results looked like in a bad freight year or in a less than stellar freight year? But because we had this engagement, we have this momentum, and we have this energy and this commitment of our employees, we were able to see even greater results in a tough year.
Absolutely. I mean, that sounds awesome. I mean, it actually made me think, it's like, even though things get tough, people want to stick around. And that's, that you've almost created a bit of a glue, or you talk about your, you know, employee experience, you created a sticky experience in many ways.
Right. And that's the whole, that's what I saw, is the whole premise around engagement is that you build this resilience to last through tough times and this energy and excitement to capitalize on great times.
Absolutely.
And that's what it's there for.
So let's bring it sort of full circle. And so you did say that you are not an advocate of dumping the annual performance reviews, and you actually just think that they are an old format done poorly, but you're still a fan of them. So how does the real-time feedback process work and sort of integrate with the annual performance reviews?
So, you know what's interesting? I'm going to start with one point on the annual performance reviews, because there was a Harvard Business Review article written about HR people following the shiny object.
Uh-huh.
Now, we constantly get blamed for doing this. And so, I've been studying for the past probably 4 years this movement of doing away with performance reviews, and I want to be open-minded. Like, maybe I just really like them and I don't understand this whole movement. So with my team this year, we did a focus group and we were considering, I wanted to be open. I'm like, let's consider whether or not we should do these. And I was shocked at the visceral reaction from people when we had the discussion about maybe we don't do performance reviews. Because people are like, what are you talking about? Like, of course we have to have these. We need to understand it's because our approach has been feed forward. It's been, you got to talk about last year, but for a couple minutes, this really has to be about what do you got to do to get to next? What do you got to do to continue to grow yourself professionally or grow your career, whatever your aspiration is?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of getting rid of these was just like, okay, good. I'm glad this is what I believe, but I just wanted to, do a pulse check with the employees. So that's why we kept them. How we use real-time feedback, it's going to sound really just so simple, because it actually is, is that we have coached and trained our managers on how to have coaching conversations all the time in the moment. And so we do a leadership training. We've called it Fuel. We've branded it, kind of matches our industry. And it's a course where we teach managers about something as basic as Maslow hierarchy of needs.
Yes.
We help them understand what people need from you, and that having these coaching conversations or just real communication in the moment actually is what people are looking for. So we aren't tracking feedback yet. However, we're really excited about the technology High Ground that we're using, because they're about to roll out a feedback module that will help us track some of it, which is good to track it. But beyond that, it's ensuring that people are having ongoing, constant, regular communication.
Yeah.
The other thing, and I know it sounds really basic, but it kind of, you know, people aren't doing it.
Sometimes the simplest things are the best and the most powerful.
I know. Well, and also to your point, it's like the simple things, just making sure that you stick with it.
Yeah.
And that you don't just run to the next, like, okay, here's the next idea. It's like, no, just stick with it. Show the progress, show that it's working, and it will be effective. And the other thing is that we're more transparent about the way rewards are tied to your compensation, or rewards are tied to your performance. And so with that, employees are actually demanding feedback.
Right.
So they're demanding that their managers give them coaching, clear goals, feedback, and if they're not, we're hearing about it in HR. Like, they're coming to us and saying, hey, my manager hasn't talked to me in 3 months about my performance. So they're not afraid to say, hey, I expect if you're going to hold me accountable and my pay is going to be impacted, I'm going to hold very high expectations of you as my manager to make sure it's clear what I got to do.
Okay.
So that's definitely helped. This year, we added a little we added a couple things to the process. One is we have we're using, you know, the High Ground technology for performance. We, because it's very configurable, you can do whatever you want with it.
Uh-huh.
We have a career pulse section in the formal annual one and the informal semi-annual one, where the employee has to answer some questions about how they feel about their career,
mm-hmm,
and the training opportunities that are being provided for them. And then that promotes a conversation between the employee and their manager that's specific about their career and the career aspirations. And then this year, this is the first time we're doing this. I've done it in my past life and it's very effective, so we're doing it this year, is we just launched a post-performance review survey for the whole organization. And we're asking people, was the conversation valuable? Did it help you know what's expected? Did it help you understand what you can do to grow your career? How much time did you spend on it? And then we have the flip for the managers on, how easy was it to do? Do you feel like this was worth your time? And everybody knows we're doing this survey, so we believe that we'll have raised the bar for the performance review conversations, knowing that afterwards you're going to get some feedback on it.
So it's fascinating, because there was a piece of research, I'm pretty sure you would have seen it, I think it's from a couple of years ago, it comes from Gallup, and it was around engagement. And they said, you know, that there's the Gallup numbers come out, and they're always a little bit sort of, it's almost like watching rain clouds come over. But there was a subsequent piece of research where they looked at it and they said, you know what, 70% of the you can explain 70% of the variance between the high performers and the low performers through the quality of the management in organizations, and almost like how managers engage with their employees and how they manage them and coach them and develop them and et cetera, et cetera. And I just think what you're talking about here, where you're making, there's a loop around, there's a performance loop with the individual and the organization, but there's also a performance loop with the, you know, the manager and HR and their employee, that sort of contract around. It's not just about managing a team, as it were, but it's about managing that individual's professional development, which I think is, there's all sorts of different levels there. And I just think that it's fascinating and really interesting and very cool. And I just say, well, I'm just liking hearing more about it.
Yeah, I will tell you that when I mentioned we talk about the Maslow hierarchy of needs, I fully believe that people will buy into something that they feel a purposeful connection to.
Sure.
And so when we rolled out our management training, I trained, I would say a third, I personally trained a third of the leaders of the organization. And then from there, I handed it off to the rest of the HR team and they trained the rest of the organization.
Uh-huh.
But for me, and the way we designed it and the way it was rolled out was explaining to managers this huge responsibility they have that it's not here to manage tasks.
Yeah.
That's not what we want. Like that's kind of like, you know, the ticket to the game. Of course you have to manage tasks, but what you're here to do is to make people successful and help them achieve their aspirations.
Sure.
That's what you do. You're here to inspire performance. You're here to get the best out of everybody on your team. And that needs to be the lens that you're using through everything that you do. So I do believe in this strongly, as does our executive team, which is why it works.
Excellent. So, Cheryl, say there's somebody that was like reading the highlights or listening to our conversation here, and they were thinking, all right, we need to do something more than, well, I like the sound of what Cheryl's doing. I like the sound of this real-time feedback idea and having it augment the annual performance review. And if you were to give them advice about where they should get started on their own journey, let's say, where would you suggest that they start with all of this? Because it's quite a big thing that you've taken on, right?
Right. I mean, I'm going to go back to what I said before. It sounds so simple, and it's not revolutionary.
Sure.
But it really is the only place to start, and that's making sure that the values and the direction of the company are crystal clear.
Right.
If you don't start there, every piece of effort you put into this is going to be a waste. And so all the fun, shiny objects, you can plug in social technology, you can plug in a bunch of training programs, and you can use Chatter and all those things, but if people aren't clear on what the values and behaviors are, it's not going to matter. And the second thing is ensuring leadership alignment, because this is where I also see things go wrong, is that you can roll it out, but if you've got a couple leaders over here that are like, whatever, I'm not doing that, or I don't believe in that, that's an HR thing, or that's that person's thing, people see that, and they're not going to buy in. They're going to say it's the flavor of the month, and they're going to watch to see who's actually embodying it and deciding whether or not they're going to get on board or not. So I would start there. If an organization says, we've got it, check, we've got the values, we've got that, everybody knows what they are, but how do we kind of take it to the next level?
Mm-hmm.
You have to start with something that's interesting and quick and easy and fun, which is why we started with social recognition.
Right.
Like it because then you said the word momentum. You get momentum.
Yeah.
You get buy-in. And for the employees, their first introduction to performance was through something fun. It was through recognition, something that feels good. So then when you add in performance, it doesn't have this negative connotation. It actually has like, okay, I get it. This is about helping me be better.
Cool. I like it. We've covered quite a lot of ground there. I mean, but Cheryl, is there anything else that you think we've missed out that you'd like to add, sort of top tips or something for our readers and listeners?
Yeah, I think the one word of advice that we give to anybody out there is be aware of organizational indigestion.
Okay,
so,
I love it. Tell me what that is.
It's like, it's when you roll out more than the organization can actually even digest in one sitting.
Nice.
So as much as you want to, yes, organizational indigestion, where you're just so excited and you're like, oh, there's all these things out there that we can do and we can, because there are so many amazing ways that you can engage a workforce and new technologies and different approaches and this training class and that training class and this motivational speaker and this over here. If you throw too much at them at once, they can't even digest it, even if it's good stuff. So just make sure that you take it at the right pace, given the size of your organization and what your organization has an appetite for.
Mm-hmm.
And then just keep with it. You know, don't just keep introducing new things that don't connect to it.
Excellent. So Cheryl, that brings me to my final question that I always ask at the end of these interviews. And that question is this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Of course there's something I would like to shamelessly plug, and that is using Echo Global Logistics as your third-party logistics broker. That we are here to help shippers get stuff from one place to the next, and we do it with a workforce of passionate, inspired employees who genuinely care about you and your business and care about you as a shipper and you as a carrier. So I think Echo is a place where if you care about your customers too, you should use us.
Fantastic. Cheryl, I'll make sure I get all that edited up and linked up and give you the good work that you're doing at Echo Global Logistics a big shout out. But thank you so much for sharing your insights today. I mean, that's what a fantastic story and what fantastic progress and even more fantastic numbers. I mean, congratulations. It's been awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for your time.